हरिः ॐ सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
Okay, the second one. Samkirtan extinguishes the fire of material existence. This material existence appears to be pleasurable and sweet, but in reality it is like a fire in the depths of a forest. Such a fire can reduce the entire forest to ashes. The faithless non-devotees must constantly tolerate the excruciating burning pain of the flaming forest of material existence. But when Lord Krishna's holy name is congregationally chanted in full perfection, the devotees, even though they may dwell in the material world, are never scorched by those flames. So you see, sweet, pleasurable, these elements, then the difficulty comes is that it appears, but it isn't actually. So there's always the element of being disappointed. So there's a disappointment then, that will be these scorching. I mean, of course, there's always the anxieties that go, I mean, the disappointment take before in the way of lack of emotional support, maybe in the way of, how you say, so much anxiety, it may be physical difficulty. So anything on the physical, mental, platforms will cause us trouble, or your identity, these things may fall apart. Right? We have our idea who we are, then it doesn't actually function like that, right? So then all these different things may be going on, right? Then, so this will create a problem. So for the devotees, these things aren't a problem because they have their identity, so they're not going to be disturbed by some change in that conditional, identity, because they're fixed in their constitutional. Right, there's not going to be a physical pain is there, but it's not going to have the same element that this is actually what there is. One knows it's just that's the way material nature is, so one tolerates. Right, then you have the emotional platform is that material world is naturally there's going to be this and that, but the point is that we know we're always connected with Krishna. So he's saying here is when he's perfectly chanted in full perfection, then there won't be any disturbance at all. Right? So in the process of getting from material consciousness to full perfection, then to that degree that the Samkirtan is going nicely, to that degree there'll be no disturbance materially. Right? That doesn't mean the disturbance doesn't happen. It means you're not disturbed by it when it happens. Does that make sense? It's very important to know this difference. Most people think religion means there'll be nothing go wrong. Right? But actually what it means is when things go wrong, you don't care. Right? Because it's a material world, it will go wrong. Does that make sense? It has to go wrong. It's a material world. But when it goes wrong, it won't bother you. That's the whole point of the spiritual life. That's the point of religion. It's not that it's going to turn the material world into a perfect place. No, you become perfect in this imperfect place. So the imperfect place doesn't bother you. Right? So it's very important to note that difference. Otherwise, sometimes we think I'm doing my devotional service, how do all these things go wrong? Right? That's just the material world. That's what it does. You know what I'm saying? But it doesn't bother you. Does that make sense? Yeah. Samkirtan, yes.
Trying to improve devotee relationships, we can only influence ourselves most of the time, speaking from my personal limited view. So I can change my mentality and be more forgiving and tolerant. At the same time, that doesn't really change the relationships with a whole lot of people, because they still perceive one or act with one in the same way due to their own conditioning. So it doesn't really necessarily improve the relations nor the service.
Mm-hmm.
So one may question, well, formerly I was a bad guy, but I got the job done.
Mm-hmm.
Now I'm a good guy, and the job doesn't get done, and also the relationship doesn't improve. So what's the advantage of...
Advantages is that ultimately it's not what you're doing here, as is the development of your mentality. It means you are trying to make an endeavor to do something very nice for Krishna. It going nicely or not, it is basically it's how nice the medium is, but it's more important is what is being delivered through this medium, right? So that's why one will keep making the endeavor. In that, then, forgiving and improving the character, all these different things, that's very important. But that, like you said, may or may not always be appreciated by others in getting something done. In the long run, you're dealing like that, people will notice it. From here and there, it slowly starts to be noticed. And then after a while, that's appreciated. But until that happens, then people will think it's the same, because they can't tell, you're doing your service, whether you don't like them or you've forgiven them, they won't notice the difference there. Where it will be noted is in how you try to interact with them. In other words, dealing in such a way that you don't offend them, trying to find, in other words, understanding what is their mentality in the way of the positive aspects of their trying to do their service. We're not saying necessarily the next, level up from that. You know what I'm saying? Means their intent, they want to do something nice for Prabhupada. But it may be that they have no idea what they're doing. But they're making that endeavor, and maybe due to their conditioning, their false ego makes them think they're doing a great job. And they're making a mess of everything. But the underlying thing is that you want to do something nice for Prabhupada. So if you can catch that and work from that point in your interaction with them, then you'll be able to start to get through, because then you're starting from that. You know what I'm saying? He says, I understand you want to do something nice for Prabhupada. He wanted, something done in this area, and you're doing your best in that. Because right there, then they can understand you appreciate what it is actually they're doing. Then you can start to work with, but, here, this has been done, but this result's not so good. So you're still not putting it on so much their endeavor. But so maybe, by making these adjustments, then our result will improve. Does that make sense?
Yeah. By being cooperative and humble and introspective, a lot of times it tends to reinforce the other person's misconceptions, because they feel, yes, I was right, and you were wrong. And so it doesn't really help neither the person nor the situation or the relationship.
Mm-hmm.
It's good for personal development to develop that kind of humility, but mm-hmm. one has to take a very distant...
Yeah, no, one has to take... Means, in other words, if one can influence the situation, one does. If you can't, then better to just develop yourself. Because then if you develop in the time that it takes before the time factor adjusts, by that time may have the qualities by which you would be able to then implement the things that you're speaking about. It's like Prabhupada says, it's just like the time factor is such, 11th canto is describing, that the way the universal order is demigods on the top, demons on the bottom, right? But then the problem comes is the demons somehow or another are not satisfied with this universal order, so they like to somehow or another, go them on the top and kick out the demigods. So according to, by the influence of the time factor, sometimes they're actually able to do this. And the demigods can't be in their place, can't be anything. And so then if you can do something, great. But if you can't, then the principle is one waits. Because it's just a matter of time before it'll reverse again. So in that time where one can't have influence in that, then one takes up that personal development. Another example is given, I think, in the Krishna book, I think in the second chapter, when it's talking about how Devahuti looked like, a fire covered by ash, you know, even though the Supreme Lord is in her womb. So she's very effulgent, but it was like that effulgence of fire covered by ash. You know, like she's very effulgent, but who can see her? She's in the prison. And then Prabhupada gives the example that the sadhu then, if he can act, you know, and have influence, he does. If not, then he stays quiet, you know, and just develops himself. And then when the opportunity comes, then that comes up. Does that make sense? Because you have the element is that they will, but the more developed you are, the more in a humble way you'll be able to say something very significant. You know what I'm saying? Because the thing is, there has to be a distinct, you're dealing with them and you're getting a result in a certain way that works with their mentality and all that, but it may be, like you were saying, a bit coarse. So if you can develop enough that you can get below that, you know what I'm saying, then what you say has real import. They have to acknowledge it, and it generally will stop them in their tracks. But then that needs a lot of development to do that. You know what I'm saying?
Sometimes the going really deep and, you know, even full dandavat might just be interpreted as weakness.
But this is a different thing. What we're talking here is it's a spiritual power. Yeah. That what you say cuts right through whatever they're saying or thinking. And the reality is so clear to them, it just stops them what they're saying. That's what I'm saying about this other thing is that it's not a technique. It's a way of interacting. By technique, then of course, then you have different things you have to do and you have to present yourself. There's a Bengali saying that you should never, if you become too big, then the storm will knock you over, and if you become too small, the goats will eat you. Like that. So that element is there. One has to protect oneself. But what we're saying here is that it's not a technique. It's a matter of, it's just the spiritual understanding is what's being presented, rather than simply, you know, mechanics of something or the efficiency of something or like that. It's like, you know, it's like someone to say, oh yeah, we can do this, but then the business thing, we could do that, we make money by this and that, but then there's these arrangements, and then there's that. And they just stop and it says, what has this got to do with Krishna? You know, and then it's kind of like everyone, you know, probably thought it was obvious, but then they have to think about it. And because you can see there's no connection there, you know, other than ultimately somewhere down the line, then it stops them. And then at that point, then you can say something. That's what I mean. It's not a technique. It's a matter of just communicating something that's very real. So when you can see that reality, then you can show it to them. But you have to, you know, the attitude is right moment. It's not like you're showing them. It's just a matter of this is just obvious. You know, this is. So there's no attitude on your part. There's no challenging. It's just like, you know, it's just like a child comes in. Let's say, example would be this one devotee. You know, him and his wife were there. The parents, you know, they always give trouble and all this and that. And then, you know, finally then when the child is born, somehow the grandchildren always soften up the parents, you know. And so then, you know, this and that. So they're at the house one day. And they weren't, you know, getting very far with the parents. You know, they're stuck in their ways and not very open to, you know, the other children's newfound, you know, lifestyle and everything like that. So then the wife and the child was like 3 years old. They were in the kitchen. And, you know, while they're in the kitchen, then, you know, the mother and daughter are talking and this and that. And then the grandchild, somebody goes over to the refrigerator, opens the door. And then when the child opens the door, the child starts shrieking like anything. You know, so they think, you know, like the kid's been killed or something. So they come running over, what's wrong, what's wrong? And then she says, Mommy, Mommy, Grandma's keeping dead bodies in the refrigerator. You know? And basically speaking, you know, this grandmother became a vegetarian. Because it was just so clear. If you say meat eating, this, that, they go on and on and on. But it's just the child says, it's dead bodies. And then suddenly grandma goes, wow. You know? Like that. You know? So that kind of, that's what we mean, is that if you can cut through with that, then it works very, very nicely. Like you can see, like on Prabhupada Speaks Out, right? It's like, they say something, Prabhupada says something. They say something, again, Prabhupada says something, and then keeps talking for the rest of the article, right? So, because he's just cutting through, right? So it's like, if it was us, you know, then it's, we speak something, they speak something. We speak something, they get louder. We get louder, it turns into a whole fight and goes back and forth, half sentences, one words, the whole rest of the page, like that. But somehow Prabhupada is able to cut through. So that's what we're meaning. So, but that would take that understanding, that self-realization, you know, understanding oneself, not being worried about the social status, because it's a point of, it's a fact or not, whether you do it or not, whether I'm involved or not, it's just reality. Because that kind of thing, because otherwise there's always the idea that someone says something because they have a motive, they want something from it. And if they take it nice, they don't take it, you leave it. And like that, many will appreciate, many won't. And so it's just one of those things, if you can live with that, then you can move forward, you know, and there'll be, one senior devotee was giving, I think it was Bhavananda, he's talking about the big devotee. And he says you can be the big devotee, but if you're so caught up in being the big devotee, then you can take, you know, life after life, come back as the big devotee, while everybody else will have gone back to Godhead. You know, so that element then is this, if we can appreciate and do like that, then things will move forward. It'll be quiet, it won't even not be noticed by others so much. You know, basically you just have to protect it. You know, that's the don't let the goats eat you. You know, and then as time goes, then it'll be recognized, it'll come up again. It may take years, you know, like Prabhupada. Trying to work with the God Brothers, as said, didn't work so good. So he started whatever he was doing, and it took some time before it's noticed, you know. Basically, it was, you know, 30 years, basically. Is that okay?
Yeah, well, direct speech is definitely not appreciated. And I feel my problem is that two elements, I bring in too much ego or attitude because of past or personal issues or differences mm-hmm. of opinions, mm-hmm. and then usually it turns sour, mm-hmm. or not enough purity to actually just speak very general about the principle and to get to where one is supposed to mm-hmm. be going with the discussion.
So on that then, if you can, how you say, by the practice of the second one, work on the first one. Because the main thing is the first one is just what's going to cause problems. Because if that's there, then generally it's never appreciated, especially as how you say, the modern culture in its so-called way refines. It appreciates less and less of this kind of straightforwardness or confidence or other things like that. So that's why the humility is appreciated, because lacking potency, then, you know, or material, you know, ability, if you're humble, then they can step on you, while if you're not humble, they can't, you know. So that makes them feel like what you're saying, that they're doing a great job, they're moving forward, because now they can step on you. But, you know, so that you want to avoid.
Because it doesn't improve the relationship.
No. But it's a matter of, sidestepping it, or don't, you know, in other words, what they want to get done, you get done by, how you say? They're getting done what they want to do. But you keep the relationship, you know, by however it's your natural way of dealing, so you can split it into two. You know, maintain, cultivate the relationship, but, you know, the material side of it may not go how you would appreciate it, you know. But if they're the one, you know, if the ball belongs to them, then, you know, they play the game the way they like, you know. But then it's just a matter of if you want to play ball with them or not, you know. Is that okay? Okay. Something else? No? Okay. Sampakatan spreads the rays of the benediction moon. You had something? Oh, okay. Lord Krishna's holy name imparts the supreme goodness and munificence. Shreya means benediction. Kairava, white lilies. Chandrika, moon rays or white luminescence. Just as the rising moon illuminates and reveals the whiteness of the white water lily, similarly the chanting of Krishna's holy name reveals the greatest benediction for the entire universe. Human society cannot benefit from material desires for sense enjoyment, fruit of work, or speculative knowledge. Chanting Krishna's name blesses all with the greatest prosperity. So here there's this focus on... So in other words, the Sankirtan mission, all benefit you want, because they're saying, okay, it cleanses the heart. From that, then you can appreciate that the material existence doesn't have anything really to offer. But with that, then the problem is going to be is then where do I stand? What do I put my faith in? So then this thing of the rays of the benediction moon. Then all whatever good is there will come through the Sankirtan mission. You don't have to worry that... It will be lacking because one's material existence is diminished. Does that make sense? This is always a very important point. We see in the Bhagavatam, you're getting the element that you're kicking out, you're establishing Krishna as the Supreme Lord. But up to this point, we've always tried to be the Supreme Lord. And so we have confidence that by our methods, we will be happy. Though we haven't been, but we have this idea we will be. Right, so that means then when you establish Krishna as God, right? So then in our mind, you're replacing us with Krishna, right? Instead of the other way around, right? So that would mean then you have to first establish Krishna is going to take care of you, right? Does that make sense? So we see immediately that the first pastimes that come up in the Bhagavatam then are that of protection. Right? So that you know it will all be nice, right? And this, and that material world still is going to be a miserable place, but it won't bother you. So Queen Kunti is saying, you know how everything is. It was so nice that when when we were in the forest, it was actually better than it was better when it was worse, right? Because now everything's nice, but you're not here. You know, in other words, that point of Krishna being involved, that makes everything perfect. Does that make sense? Once that's established, then you can have faith, right? Then we can start the teaching. That means that's an important teaching, but the Bhagavatam as it was spoken, because it was spoken by people who had faith, right? Parikshit Maharaj is a devotee, right? He's from in the womb, he's a devotee, right? So therefore, you don't have to establish that Krishna is going to protect you, because in the Bhagavatam, the first story is about who? Parikshit Maharaj being protected. So he doesn't have a problem with protection. So therefore, when Sukadev Goswami starts speaking, he starts speaking second canto. Does that make sense? But we have to come to that same platform as him, having that same faith. Right? Therefore, the first canto. Does that make sense? So here we see is that, okay, we've kicked out material existence, so that means that all this nice blessing, chanting Krishna's name blesses all with the greatest prosperity. Right? Because then you're worried, okay, if we get rid of material existence, then what am I going to have? Does that make sense? Like that. So in here, it shows the things that actually create the problem. Human society cannot benefit from material desires for sense gratification, food of work, or speculative knowledge. Right? So basically, this is... So the enjoyment means you have enjoyment... You have fruit of work, speculative knowledge. So the enjoyment means you already have had to have done some fruit of work to get it. Right? Because unless there's artha, there's not going to be any kama. So in other words, your kama, material artha, right, and the and how you say the speculative knowledge. So this enjoyment is that the soul doesn't have a position in which it enjoys directly. Souls don't do that. Right? We're trying to do it here, but they don't. The nature of the soul is being expanded from the internal potency, and all enjoyment, all rasa is coming from Krishna. That means, where's our enjoyment going to come from? Right? Krishna through the internal potency to us. Right? So when we leave out Krishna and the internal potency and go directly to the external potency, there can be no enjoyment. Because it's not where we would find it. Where our enjoyment is ananda. Ananda is not found in the material world. Right? Like that. So therefore, it's only on the transcendental platform that the jiva can be happy. There is no such thing as material happiness for the jiva. So then, yeah. So it's actually unnatural for the natural for the soul to be happy, but it's unnatural for them to try to enjoy the senses. Right? The natural position is in service to others, Krishna and the devotees, their happiness, in that environment of their happiness, you become happy. You know what I'm saying? So that way, taking Krishna's prasad, anything in connection with Krishna, then that's what makes the living entity happy. Right? Fruit of work, that you're doing it for yourself, because the jiva's position is, he is instrumental. Right? So that means he's always helping, assisting in the Lord's pastimes. That's his position. So he's not the controller or the enjoyer. So then the fruit of work where you want for yourself, then that means you have to be the doer, and which we're not. So that also doesn't work for the jiva. Right? And then the speculative knowledge, that having knowledge that's not connected with Krishna. Krishna is knowledge. He is sarvajna. He knows everything. He's in everything, between everything. So all knowledge that is connected to Krishna, that becomes useful to the jiva. But knowledge that doesn't have Krishna connected to it actually does no benefit for the jiva. People may say it's very nice, you can do so many things with it, but factually for the jiva, his happiness, right? Because you have knowledge, you have fruit of work, you have sense enjoyment to be happy, right? But none of these make people happy, right? You can say, no, but I was happy when I got, no, but that was, you were happy. Your idea of happiness is, if I get this, I'll be happy. Not that the thing made you happy. You know what I'm saying? Because if it made you happy, why isn't it still making you happy today? The happiness you felt when you got it, if it made you happy, then you have it. It's there in your house. It's sitting there. You can look at it, pick it up, do whatever you like with it. But it's not making you happy right now. Why? Because it was the thought, if I get it, I will be happy. Right? Or I can use it in this way, it'll make me happy. But it's not the thing. It's our projection on it of what we call happiness. Right? Because one person says, you know, the farmer's saying, wow, if it'll rain today, then I'll be happy. Right? And the kids are saying, if it doesn't rain today, then we'll be happy. So it's actually nothing to do with the rain. It's what value you place upon it. Does this make sense? Right? So that's the thing. So sense enjoyment, fruit of work, and speculative knowledge have never actually made anyone happy. They gain it, so they call by gaining that happiness. But the thing itself doesn't. You know what I'm saying? So that's the element. Is so the Samkirtan mission then teaches one how to adjust that sense gratification, one's work, and one's knowledge in connection with Krishna. Right? If sense enjoyment is a connection with Krishna, it's not called sense enjoyment. Right? It means it's engaging the senses in the Lord's service. Fruit of work is just called service. Speculative knowledge is called sambandha jnana. Right? Does that make sense? So if you remove Krishna from it, then all these become useless. Samkirtan is the life of all transcendental knowledge. The Mundaka Upanishad notes two types of knowledge or education, or Mundaka: material knowledge and transcendental knowledge. Indirectly, the chanting of Lord Krishna's holy name is the cause and sustainer of even material knowledge. But primarily, it is the life and soul of all transcendental knowledge. Chanting induces the jiva to break free from the shackles of false ego and prestige arising from material education, and leads him to understand his eternal relationship with Lord Krishna. The ultimate purpose of transcendental knowledge is to simply chant Krishna's holy name. Okay, explain, this transcendental knowledge then means the holy name is its life, because this transcendental knowledge then is about Krishna, and then this holy name, then by that service, by that purification, we are able to, apply that knowledge in our life. Right? We have this knowledge, we can apply it by the process of chanting. Other processes aren't going to make it work. Here it says even it sustains material knowledge. Because the holy name then is Krishna. Krishna is the source of his energies. And so your chit potency then can manifest by the means either within the spiritual world or through the influence of the Samvit Sandini Hladini, as the modes of nature in the material world. Does that make sense? So you get both from it. So that means material knowledge is still being sustained actually by Krishna. That makes sense? So it's because there's chanting of the holy name and all this that there's any knowledge anyway. Because we have to remember, there's always the Sankirtan mission has always been going on. Therefore, all these different things are there. It's also being sustained. Because the universe is being sustained in a form so that the devotees can take advantage. Does that make sense? Okay, so then also, material knowledge and spiritual knowledge. So that's the para and apara. Right? So spiritual knowledge, paravidya, means transcendental. Material knowledge, apara, means mundane knowledge that is directly usable or is very nicely or comfortably usable in support of paravidya. Right? Does that make sense? Now, if that aparavidya is not used in support of paravidya, then that same knowledge is called avidya, or ignorance. Does that make sense? So that's how mundane knowledge, that is not Vedic, is just aparavidya. It's just ignorance. It's just avidya. The Vedic knowledge, then depending upon whether you connect it to Krishna or not, then it becomes aparavidya or avidya. It can take both sides. The mundane basically is mundane. If you can engage the results of that knowledge in Krishna's service, then it becomes purified. But it doesn't mean that it attains the standard. It doesn't mean that it establishes the culture. You have knowledge about a car, but it's not that the car then becomes part of the culture. It's being able to be used in Krishna's service. When you use it, it's usable. When it's not, it's not. Right? The Vedic knowledge then will create a favorable environment. You use it for Krishna, you get that benefit. You don't, it's still a pious environment. Right? Does that make sense? So it fits in with everything else, it's complete, while the other one is not. Right? You have the car, which is nice, but then the trees don't appreciate it. Right, but in the Vedic, therefore, they use vehicles that don't bother everybody else. Right, they use chariots or that, or if you want to be high tech, then you use one of these cars that the demigods go around in that moves by mantra and other things and piety and that. Right, it just costs a little more. Right? That's it. Is that okay? Sankirtan expands the ocean of transcendental bliss. The chanting of the holy name expands the ocean of transcendental bliss. A limited expanse of water cannot be described as an ocean. Therefore, unlimited bliss is being compared to a boundless ocean. Chanting Krishna's name causes one to relish the sweet nectar of that ocean fully at every step, because this transcendental experience is unfettered by imperfections. One can always relish full spiritual nectar from the chanting of Krishna's holy name. And it says, expands ocean. So this is unlimited. It is, and so, but means the material world is compared to an ocean, but that ocean is limited. It has banks all around, right? But the devotional ocean, you can stand on this bank, but the other shore doesn't exist, right? It just keeps expanding. That's the difference. Well, the material world, if you're absorbed in it, then it's very big. If you're not absorbed in it, then you take up Krishna consciousness, it's reduced to the size of a calf's hoofprint, which is quite small. And then you can just step over like that. Very, right? But the spiritual always remains unlimited. That makes sense? So these aren't exaggerations. That's very important to note. They're not exaggerations. It's reality. It's just that we're dealing with something, so it'll mention these. It may not emphasize so much, because then we tend to think that it's an exaggeration. Because in our experience, then whatever happiness is there is always temporary. It may have been very nice at the time, but then, you know, it disappears, basically. You know, it's really great. And at the time, it seems like it's going forever, but it never does. Right? So to talk about something that eternally is perfect, then that way it's mentioned so that one is inspired to go there, but not too much is discussed that one may decide that it's not that big. Right? Does that make sense? Like that? Otherwise, yeah. Okay? Yes? No? Just mosquitoes. Okay. Samkirtan awards the cooling shelter of Lord Krishna's lotus feet. The forms and features of transcendence radiate a tender and cooling sheen that is perceivable through the chanting of Krishna's holy name. In the mundane realm, the body, mind, and above them, the soul, not only become purified by chanting the holy name, but they too gradually and inevitably are touched by the cooling tenderness of the spiritual realm. The subtle and gross contaminations in the material conception of life and the acceptance of false designations have devoured the spirit soul, but all these afflictions can be ended by the chanting of the holy name. When the soul finds release from material designations, he becomes eager to reach Lord Krishna. He thus engages in devotional service, taking shelter in the cooling shade of the Lord's lotus feet. So there's cooling and this tenderness, like that. Generally it's something, as like was mentioned before, as being too tender leaves yourself open to get hurt. So people have a tendency to not do that. But the spiritual world, they don't have to worry about that because no one ever exploits there. So therefore it can be very, very nice, very, very pleasant. Right? You can be like that here, but then you basically have to not care on whether anybody else appreciates that or not. You know, or whether it can be expressed or not. Does that make sense? You know, so that element is there, because the point is that according to how we surrender is accordingly how we'll be dealt with. Does that make sense? You know, it's like you have a grandmother can be really, really nice, right? Because she doesn't have anything specifically to be worried about. You know, she's old. Everybody else is running things. She's there, been through everything. So she can be nice. But she'll only be nice generally if you're open to her being nice. Understand? Does that make sense? You deal nice, she'll reciprocate that way. You don't deal nice, she'll, you know, just sit there and laugh and just, you know, ignore it. Does that make sense? Because, you know, why deal nice if no one's going to reciprocate it? So therefore, according to how the other person's behaving, that's how you deal with them, right? So if we're dealing in one way, then Krishna will deal with us. Because Krishna can deal in so many nice ways, but we're not surrendering to him in that way. Does that make sense? So we can think, no, but Krishna should do this, that. No, he can do this, that. But the point is if he did this, that, would you be able to accept that? Right? So we have to be in the attitude in which Krishna can act nice. Right? So by chanting, then we can appreciate actually the niceness of the transcendental realm. Like that. Because otherwise, from the material perspective, we can't really appreciate it. Like that. Right? Just because it doesn't go so nice here, so we tend to be a little defensive. You know, like that. Sankirtan completes all other processes of bhakti. In Bhakti Sandarbha 273 and in the Krishna Krama Sandarbha of the seventh canto of Srimad Bhagavatam, Srila Jiva Goswami writes, Ata eva yadyapyanya bhakti kalao kartavya tada kirtanakya bhakti samyoginaiva, which means, quote, although it is required even in Kali Yuga to practice the other eight limbs of devotional service, they must be performed in conjunction with the chanting of the holy name of the Lord. Right? So otherwise, the nine processes are mentioned. Otherwise, why do we know about them? Why does Lord Chaitanya speak about them? But the point of chanting then is the main thing, right? He says, unless you hear how you'll chant, unless you chant how you remember. So all these different things are there. So it actually is the main elements, the central feature of all the devotional activities. Right? That always has to be remembered. Otherwise, sometimes people will distract it out into karma and gyan, right, or some other aspect. But actually, it's the chanting is the most important. Right? That makes sense? References and quotes from Srila Bhaktivinoda Thakur's Sri Bhajan Rahasya. The first perfection, Cheto Darpana Marjanam. The holy name cleanses the mirror of the heart. Oh, I see. The contamination that covers the mirror of consciousness is swept away by chanting the holy name. The holy name is the embodiment of profound spiritual bliss. For example, Srila Rupa Goswami writes in the seventh stanza of the Namastika, O holy name, O Lord Krishna, you dissipate the sufferings, offenses against the holy name of your surrendered souls. You possess a transcendental form of ecstatic beauty and bliss, and you appear as the figure of supreme joy for the residents of Gokula. Therefore, you are a fully spiritual entity of the same spiritual nature as the Vaikuntha planets. I offer my repeated obeisances unto you. Okay. So, interesting note here is that dissipate the sufferings of your surrendered devotees, and it says here offenses against the holy name. The sufferings are actually the offenses. That's interesting. Okay. Second perfection. Bhava Mahav Devagni Nirvapanam. The blazing fire of material existence is extinguished. In Srimad Bhagavatam, it is stated, therefore, one who desires freedom from material bondage should adopt the process of chanting and glorifying the name, fame, form, and pastimes of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, at whose feet all the holy places stand. One cannot derive the proper benefit from other methods, such as pious atonement, speculative knowledge, and meditation in mystic yoga, because even after following such methods, one takes to fruitive activities again, unable to control his mind, which is contaminated by the base qualities of nature, namely passion and ignorance. So only the chanting will get any benefit. No one should ever think that there's something else that will give the benefit. Right? The other eight processes of bhakti become powerful and give their results because of the chanting. Right? So they're supportive of the chanting. Like that. So there is no other solution. Right, there is no material solution to material problems. There isn't any. All there is spiritual solutions. Right, it's very important. I think there's one, a couple of times probably that he was invited to programs. So then he would, on the way to the program or before the program, he'd make notes down of different points. One of it was a whole list of solutions to all the modern, you know, problems that were going on at the time. Unfortunately, they're still going on. But all whatever was there, and he would give the spiritual solution to each. Right? But then sometimes it's not seen. Oh, does, you know, so some problem is there, so if everyone congregationally chants, so this problem is there, so we distribute prasad. This is there, then people would do deity worship. That, like this, so we'll think, no, but that doesn't actually, what's the direct? Oh, that's nice, but in reality, but then that's actually against the teachings of Lord Chaitanya. Because we're saying, he's saying here is that there is no other solution. Right? So if God says there's no other solution, who is there that can actually oppose that or contradict that? You know what I'm saying? It doesn't matter. God said this is the way it is. Right? Okay. The third perfection, Shreya Kairavi Chandrika Vitaranam. The moonlight opens the white lotus of good fortune. A quote from Skanda Purana appears in Hari Bhakti Vilas 11.2.34. The holy name of Krishna, the highest benediction above all other benedictions for humanity, sweeter than the sweet honey, the eternal fruit of transcendental knowledge of the tree of entire Shruti scriptures. O best of Bhargavas, if anyone chants Lord Krishna's name just once, without offense, whether he chants with faith or indifferently, the holy name immediately liberates him. Yeah. So this without offense, yeah. See, it must be distinguished. Without offense is not actually the difficult part. With love for Krishna, that's the difficult part. Right? Because otherwise we make it, oh, pure chanting, that's like impossible. He just says once a pure name. Ajamil chanted one pure name. He didn't chant on the platform of prema. When we say pure here, we don't mean how you say, with devotion. We mean there is no material contamination. Does that make sense? Therefore, because there's no material contamination, you're freed from the material world. So in one name, you're liberated. Right? Does that make sense? Because the main point is not to get out of material existence and get rid of all these material engagements and thoughts and that. The main thing is develop love for Krishna. Right? So, because we want to develop love for Krishna, these other things are getting in the way. Therefore, they're addressed. But it's not that getting rid of them, that's perfection. Right? You know what I'm saying? It will liberate you, so you can call that perfection. But we actually don't consider perfection the end of the line. For us, prema is the end of the line. Perfection is just outside of material existence. So that means it's the, you know, the first, you know, how you say, nanometer in bhava. You know, you're not liberated, you're not there. But still, you've got to get cross bhava before you get to prema. Does that make sense? So it's important to note that point, right? And it's the eternal fruit, says the eternal fruit, not just in this age or another age, the eternal fruit of transcendental knowledge of the tree of entire Shruti scriptures, right? So it doesn't say Smriti, it says Shruti. So everything that is there in the Veda, the essence is actually chanting the holy name. Right, Manasamhita, it's all the rules, we get, you know, bent out of shape, Varnashram. But it says the most important activity a Brahmin can do, right, is chanting If he chants, then it's considered he has knows all the scriptures. Does that make sense? And so that's in his personal development, right? In his occupation, then the best is hearing and chanting. So that's what it says. Right? That makes sense. So we can see from here is that actually all the scriptures are saying that the holy name is the best benediction. The fourth perfection, Vidya. Yes.
You mentioned that just without offenses, the holy name is considered to be Shuddhanam. But
the point is when we say we're on the platform of Shuddhanam, means it's always like that. So one time you may have chanted, because I mentioned Ajamil. Here is a guy, his means Narayan, his son. So now Narayan, in this occasion that I understand, is either 3 years old or 8 years old, right? Now, let us say he's 3 years old. When Narayan was born, Ajamil was 88 years old, right? And as a young man, he was with his family, became deviated. So that means from a young man, so probably in his 20s, early 20s, or even late teens, got deviated. He's been living with his prostitute, you know, up to this date, right? So that's a long time. You know, it could be 50, 60 years, right? And so then, and he's worried about dying. Right? I think he's seeing the Yama do this, right? So they're generally a good sign, things aren't going well, right? You know, like that. So he chants his kid's name, right? Because, you know, he wants to see his kid. But that chanting was considered pure because he didn't make any offense. He didn't offend a Vaishnav. He wasn't considering the name, you know, superior, I mean, equal to, or, you know, some demigod name or like that. He wasn't offending Guru, right? Because, you know, Narad Muni told him to name his kid Narayan, like that. He wasn't doubting the scriptures. He wasn't making an interpretation, you know, right? You know what I'm saying? So therefore, it was pure. Yes.
So Maharaj, this name will be able to destroy the sins of all the whole universe?
This one name. See what it says. So he already destroyed him. So what's going on now? Like that. It was a long time ago, right? And there's a lot of people who've been, you know, working on this.
So we're still, you know, now that you're already chanting. So does that mean that no one in the universe will ever go to hell?
Does that mean no one in the universe will ever go to hell? What do you care? Oh, you want to make sure you're not going. Like that. Well, you'd have to speak to, how you say? Those guys in England with the buckets like that. They know something about going to hell. Basically, means it can destroy all that sin, but it's not that it is. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you have your sin, you chant, it'll destroy all that. Because one may think, I am so sinful, how will it destroy that? But one name can destroy it all. Right? So Jagai Madhai, so for ourselves, that we, okay, we might be, think that's possible. But for someone else, then of course they could never be purified. Right? Jagai Madhai, right? You know, every rule that could be broken, they broke it. To the point where Yamaraj didn't even want to deal with it because he didn't know how. How do you judge a guy? You know, it's like, you know, this demon, you know, he would go in and attack the Brahmins at the sacrifice, you know, and either eat them or, you know, pass stool and urine on the arena or, you know, like this, make a trouble. So it's a limited amount of stuff that's very specific. Like that. But Jagai Madhai, it was everything that could be broken, they did it. So Yamaraj didn't even know how you'd even begin to start to judge these guys. Right? So he asked for, you know, Lord Chaitanya's kindness here. So then delivering him, then Lord Chaitanya makes this point that therefore no one should criticize him. Because if they do, then you'll take on their sins. You know what I'm saying? So the point is this, for you it will destroy. Means it can clear all that, but it will clear in connection with the person who's chanting. It will create a favorable environment for everybody, right? You know, just by the devotees being on the planet, it's beneficial for the whole planet. But still, it's not that it clears it out. Does that make sense? That was your question.
Om Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivedanta ki, Jai Nitai Gaura Premanande.
Indifference
just means, in other words, indifference, being in a relationship means it's not being done with that dynamic dynamicism of devotion. You understand?
So it's not offensive.
It's just the state of consciousness that you're in. You know what I'm saying? It should be that you're fully focused, like the residents of Braja, but if you're not, it'll still work.
So is it different from inattention?
Inattentive means there is that you hear the name, but it's not necessarily that you're thinking of Krishna in devotion when you're chanting it. So it can just be just you're hearing, or just, you know, this is what you're supposed to do, or, you know, like that. Because the point is all it gives you is liberation. So therefore, we consider it a big deal. That's why we jump up and down and argue over, well, what does that mean? Or it's not possible. Or the karma could do. Or Ajamil, you know, like this and that. Because we have a lot of faith in liberation. While the pure devotees, you know, that are discussing, you know, writing these purports, it's not even a discussion. You know what I'm saying? Like that. Like that, because otherwise we tend to bring it down to our standards and definitions, and so that's why it becomes a problem. But so what if it clears all the sins in the universe? What's the big deal? If you're talking about an illusion, right, means the material existence is here, but the soul's attraction or attachment to that is illusion. So clearing an illusion is a big problem. You know what I'm saying? That's the whole point. It's a mirage. So removing a mirage is something miraculous. It is for us who have full faith in that mirage. But for someone who's dealing with the real things, you know, the mirage going away, that's no big deal. That makes sense.
Yeah.
That's the difficulty, is we define things according to our definitions. Then we run into a lot of problem, either philosophically or culturally. It means, of course, it has to be in context of our definitions, because we're the ones that have to work with it. But the thing is that without faith in the Vedic principles, we won't be able to adjust our concepts to be in line with that. Then we'll get into trouble. Does that make sense? Because when we do it purely on our standards and our way, then you'll always have problems. You know, that's why a lot of times those from the first world sometimes can't appreciate or understand the culture or behavior of those from the third world. Because they just don't behave like that. You know, there's been many generations before they kind of acted more on a personal or emotional level. You know, emotion other than anger and, you know, excitement and those kind of things, but just on, you know, commitments and, you know, these very solid, personal, interactive, you know, it's not your own personal experience, but it's a shared feeling. You know, it's been, for some people, it's been generations since it's been felt. You know what I'm saying? So they don't even know such feelings exist. You know what I'm saying? So it's a problem. Does that make sense? So for them to try to understand these other cultures, they can't. So the same way as if we impose this onto the transcendental, then there's problems. So some of it is taken into consideration that the conditioned soul, no matter what the background or culture, is going to impose some concept on there. You know, because I think I'm the controller and enjoyer, so some of that's going to be imposed anyway. So then it's a matter of by sadhana bhakti you can engage the senses and all those different things. So it's something we can relate to. The body, there's an identification. That, you know, there's all these different things. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay.